is The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Thursday morning. Hey, do we have a Thursday, anything like that? No, because it's sort of Friday for it's many people. Friday, yeah, what the hell? Just go with that. It's Friday for all intents and purposes. Not for all intensive purposes. That's not the saying. But for all intents and purposes, it's Friday. And I'm gonna manage my mood accordingly. How are you? We're headed to the weekend.
Carol's Coffee. And hot takes. Breakfast item number one.
Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says his government is working to support renters across the country as part of next month's federal budget.
We're announcing new protections for renters and new pathways to home ownership. As part of our upcoming budget, we're going to create a Canadian Renters Bill of Rights.
You're going to create a what now? A Canadian Renters Bill of Rights. Okay. So this guy has sat on his hands for the past couple of years, deliberately letting Canada's population explode without any thought to where people were going to live. And now he's going to give us a Renters Bill of Rights. It's not going to build one more rental property. That's going to just determine who wins the battle over the very few housing units there are to rent. That's all. That's all it's going to do. It's going to pick winners and losers. It doesn't create more rental space for anyone. If anything, it could create less, because you want to de-incentivize landlords, give renters more power.
Bad landlords are still landlords, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Or a landlord who just wants to make a profit.
Mm-hmm.
Do we expect landlords? You know what, Katie? I want you and your husband to take your hard-earned money, the money you've put aside to buy a house for yourself. Forget that. I want you to build a rental property for somebody else. Now, I don't want you to make any money on it. I need you to lose money, because you're doing this out of the goodness of your heart.
Perfect.
And we're going to make it very difficult to evict someone who doesn't pay their bills, and very difficult to raise the rent, even during inflation when all of your costs go up. So are you still interested?
Oh, yeah. Sign me up.
Yeah, right. Of course. Plus, I can't wait to see how he's going to do that. It has provincial territory written all over it. How? What is he going to make it a criminal code offense to treat your tenants badly? I honestly don't know how he does it. It doesn't sound like it's an area the federal government can do much in. But I guess we'll wait and see. But I'm not excited about it, because I don't think it's going to do any good. But nice try, Justin. At least you look like you're doing something, which seems to be kind of your thing.
Item number two.
Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says conservative politicians across Canada, including premiers, are lying to Canadians about carbon price.
Conservative premiers across this country are misleading Canadians, are not telling the truth.
Yeah, you know who else is misleading Canadians and not telling the truth? He is on carbon prices. This idea that the end result is the world is suddenly saved is BS, and Canadians know it. I was listening to a panel discussion in Toronto yesterday, and I heard somebody make the argument. It sounds good on the surface. You know, if you ask Canadians, the polling's been done. If you ask Canadians, do they care about climate change? They answer yes. You ask them if they want to pay $400 more a year to solve the problem, and suddenly they say no. No, finish the thought, though. That's not really it. If I thought, seriously, we could reverse climate change by paying a few hundred dollars a year more in carbon prices, I would be happy to do it.
Yes.
What Canadians are smart enough to know is the original policy is a lie. It doesn't do anything to solve an international problem. It doesn't even make a dent in an international problem. He gets to say that he's doing something about it. And he was so fearful for doing what he wanted to do, which is just make you pay more so you change your behavior, he realized he would lose an election on that. So he said, I'll give you a rebate at the same time. So he watered down his own program. And now Canadians, they forget that they get a rebate on one hand. And they also know that over time, probably the rebates won't go up, but the carbon taxes will. And sooner or later, the balance is going to tip. They're very suspicious of the future, and they should be. So, yeah, a lot of people are lying about the carbon taxes.
Item number three.
Statistics Canada says the country's population grew faster last year than it has any time since the 1950s, reaching almost 40.8 million people.
About 98% of population growth was explained by international migration. And in fact, it's mostly the temporary immigration component that is driving population growth in Canada.
That's what I was talking about before. I mean, that's something you're largely in control of. There are going to be some people show up on your doorstep and they're claiming refugee status, harder to deal with. But we've allowed people to show up and we've offered nowhere for them to live. Slowly turning ourselves into a third world country. Pretty soon, Canadians will be leaving this country and showing up on somebody else's doorstep.
Item number four.
The Center for Addictions and Mental Health is calling on the federal government to restrict gambling advertising to protect youth mental health.
Their brains are malleable. They're growing. They're still changing. And they're very susceptible to addictions during adolescence.
Good idea. Bad idea. I hate the advertising I see and hear everywhere about gambling now. Despise it. Mm-hmm. But I have a feeling if we were to put an end to it, PJ'd be gone next week. Mm-hmm. And a month after that, Katie'd be gone. Mm-hmm. And I'd be sitting here on my own. Okay, I'm not going to lie. That's not my real fear. My fear is in 2 weeks from now, I'll be gone. And PJ will be sitting where Katie is, and Katie will be sitting where I am, or they'll be sitting together where I am doing the show together. And yeah, broadcasting needs this money. It's a huge source of revenue, and it's a terrible place to get money. It feels like dirty money. It really does. But you know, everybody else is pouring their money into social media where, and I don't understand it. I don't find it very effective. There's not very often I see or hear something on social media that I respond to. I don't even notice advertising on social media. But, you know, if you got a billboard up there and I'm sitting at the intersection, I look up and read it. That can affect me or not, but
it, or, you know, three different gambling commercials in a commercial break when you're watching any sports game or any new TV show coming out. I've never thought about gambling so much since I've started watching sports games. It's just, it's insane. And it definitely is getting younger. A lot of people younger are starting to look into it, which is scary.
PJ, did you bet against yourself in that fight in Kingston?
I did not. No, that would, I think that's illegal.
I would hope.
Well, there
it
you
is.
Go. PJ would have. PJ also would have been in that.
But
gambling.
People probably gambled on those fights. No.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, I think there was a couple sites that you could bet on. You know, because it was a popular show in Ontario. It's mm-hmm. like the biggest MMA show, but I don't know. Like, I don't think people lost a lot of money betting on me.
Well, okay. So you're involved in a sport and you play and you watch a lot of sports. How do you feel about gambling? You're sitting there very quietly, putting your name closer to the top of that list of the first guy to go in 2 weeks from now if we stop gambling advertising.
Well, I'm the one who pushes the button, so I'm usually the last one to stay, right? But I like gambling, I think, like, especially with something like this, like, you have some people need to make their own mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if you tell people they can't drink or smoke, then they go and drink and smoke. And
yeah, but we don't allow tobacco advertising.
No, but we used to. There's still, you know, alcohol.
We used to, but there's still alcohol. Yeah.
And like, when I, just my own personal experience, when I was a kid, I was, you know, my grandfather was really into online poker. So then I went to college and got into online poker. And then I maxed out my first credit card. And then I was stressed.
No, I'm asking an addict how he feels about online.
But then I, advertising. So now I don't gamble. Like, I'll bet a dollar on a hockey game here and there. But like, and like, maxing out my credit card when you're in college was $500. But that was a lot of money to me. And then I realized that I had, you know, I probably shouldn't be doing this, because you get like in that motion, okay, one more game and I got to win my money back, and you realize the slippery slope.
Yeah, I have a friend who says, and he was a big gambler before it became legal, and he always, every time I talked to him about it, he won. I won. People find new definitions of win, because if he won as often as he did, he'd be living in a much bigger house. And not working. He'd be retired. He'd be gambling full time. But people have a way of convincing themselves that they'll win. So I, in the end, back to where I started here, I'm torn about it. I hate it. But I don't know how mainstream broadcasting survives without it. That's the problem we find ourselves in. 6:15 and plus three is the Morning Rush.
Did I shock your mom? She forgot that I existed. And it's my fault, but I just like to play the victim. I'll drink alcohol.
On the go, take News Talk 580 CFRA Ottawa with you. Download, listen, and learn through the iHeartRadio app. Now back to the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll.
I wonder if insurance companies, car insurance companies, bought stocks in the company that makes these car tracker systems before they told you to buy them. No, I seriously do wonder that a little bit. I do. Yeah, it looks like insurance companies have finally done what I figured they'd have done a long time ago. And this was always the way it was going to go. People are starting to get a letter saying, look, you own a car that gets stolen frequently. The Honda CR-V is the most frequently stolen car. I don't know. If I was going to steal a car, I'd steal one I can't afford. I always wondered about that. The Honda, it's a nice car, but it's not a Lexus or a BMW or whatever. Anyway, there's either a demand for them or like a higher demand, or they're easier to steal. I don't know. But if you have one of those and another one of the cars on the list, there's Lexus and Land Rover and a few others. But if you're on that list, you have a choice. We're going to increase your insurance premium every year, or you go out and buy this tag system. It's a car tracking system. It's about $400. There's your choice. This is where we are. $1 billion a year the insurance companies are losing because of stolen cars. An average of 5 vehicles will be stolen every day in Ottawa. 5 cars are going to be stolen in Ottawa today. Probably 3 of them already overnight as we slept. Oh, there goes one now. So, we might even hit 6 today. Who knows? It's an epidemic. It's a serious problem. Amanda Dean is the president of the Insurance Bureau of Canada for the Ontario and Atlantic regions. She says auto theft-related claims in Ontario have increased 329% between 2018 and 2022.
That is a lot of money that insurers didn't account for in terms of calculating premiums, because claims costs drive premiums.
So they have a couple of choices here as insurance companies. They can make us all pay more, or they can figure out who drives the cars that are most likely to get stolen, assess them to be at higher risk, and charge accordingly. People are mad, and you know they're going to be mad. But this is what insurance companies have always done. They assess risk, and then they put that risk on an entire group of people. So, yeah, you know, you could have an armed guard sleep in your Honda CR-V, and doesn't matter. You're driving that car, they're going to charge you more. That's just the way it is. They've done it all along. I mean, if you live in a certain neighborhood, you pay more than if you live in another neighborhood because there are more car accidents in that neighborhood. You drive a sports car, you pay more than if you drive a little four-cylinder clunker. You just do. What does that say about you? Well, as an individual, you may not speed even in a sports car. But common sense would say you didn't get that sports car so you could take the bus, right? You like to drive fast. That's why you got the sports car. So you have to pay. Any other part of society, that would be called prejudging people or prejudice. And insurance companies get away with it. That's what they've always done. I don't see any other way to do it, by the way. So at least they're offering you the option. Now people are worried about the privacy part of that. I understand that too. But insurance companies say, listen, we're not going to be tracking you all the time. And of course, they don't have the time to do that. But people don't like the feeling of being watched. I would say it's 2024, though. If I could save a few $100 a year in insurance every year, and I just have to buy tag once in the life of the car. So if you have the car 8-10 years, then you're amortizing that cost over a decade. It's not that expensive. And I don't really think they care to follow you around to see if you went to pick up milk today or not, or you're parking at a hotel and cheating on your wife. Don't worry, she already hired a private investigator. She's on to you, pal. It's not going to matter. I don't know why I chose the man there to be the villain. He's obviously sleeping with a woman, so they could have tracked her too. But people want to track you these days, they'll track you. You have that phone in your pocket. It makes me laugh now when people get worried about being tracked. You got that phone in your pocket everywhere you go. How about the GPS in your car? They can already track you if they really wanted to. The hackers took your car while you were eating your cereal for breakfast this morning because they hacked into it. They could also hack your GPS if they wanted to know where you were going. So I don't want to pay because your car is more likely to be stolen. I hope they'll mitigate it in other ways too, though. Like if you park it in a garage, or you put that big clunky piece of steel across your steering wheel, or right, if you take other measures, do they reduce your costs as well? And by the way, if you've been holding out on that, you know the car insurance where you pay as you drive, but they put a tracker in the car. It doesn't really track where you are, but it tracks your mileage. You might as well go ahead and do that now too. See if you can save a little bit of money. Maybe one will offset the other. It's 6:28. It's 2 degrees. It's the morning rush. And while it feels like Friday, it's actually Thursday. Gord Wilson, fresh off a big win, joins us to talk Sens hockey. Coming up next.
Oh, what a save from Forsberg.
You can hear the ping of the pipe in behind.
Giroux fires, scores!
At the rink with Gord Wilson.
To Sanderson. Throws it to the corner. Centering pass, down low in front. Kachuk scores! 5-0 Ottawa. Kachuk buries it.
Yeah, as a Leaf fan long time, that's the point at which I think, well, we're finished now. We're going to lose this game. But no, the Senators are not the Leafs. They actually hung on to win a game that they pulled way ahead in. Nice to get a victory. Gord, you must be in a good mood this morning.
Yeah, sure. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it was a fun game to call, and there aren't too many over the course of Senators franchise history that the team has been up 5-0 after 20 minutes of play. I beg to differ. It wasn't a hang-on situation. They played very well in the third period as well, to the point where...
No, that's my point. Oh, they weren't the Leafs.
Right, okay.
They weren't hanging on by a thread. They actually kept their foot on the accelerator.
Well, yeah, they got a little bit of a scare in the second period, and that was to be expected. Buffalo obviously was embarrassed on home ice after giving up 5 goals and swapping out their goaltenders, and they scored a couple of goals in that second, but the Senators had great chances as well. The Buffalo Sabres' new goaltender that came in was outstanding in period number two, but it was the third period that was just as impressive as the first for defensive style of play. They just shut the Buffalo Sabres down and didn't allow an abundance of scoring opportunities, and as a result, cruise to that 6-2 victory, and it's 3 in a row now, and it's Chicago and Connor Bedard tonight.
3 in a row. Hey, I mean, it's a shame it doesn't matter in the big picture, but 3 in a row is not nothing if you're a fan. You want to see wins, right? That's what brings you out to the arena. You want to see goals, and you want to see wins, so that's great. You know, watching them beat the Buffalo Sabres is one thing, but you don't want them to be the Buffalo Sabres, yeah. The team that every year we predict is going to get better,
yeah,
and they never quite do. How do we avoid that here in Ottawa?
Well, it's 7 seasons now without playoff hockey for Ottawa, and if you need reason for optimism or reason for more hope, you can just look no further than Buffalo, because it's a disastrous organization right now. It'll be 13 consecutive years without postseason play, and I think Bruce Garriock, our buddy Bruce Garriock from Post Media, wrote this week that that's the franchise you have to look at and not duplicate, because yeah, they've made some mistakes along the way. There's no question about that. And, you know, going into the postseason and missing the playoffs again for a 13th consecutive year, it's only natural to think, okay, more changes are coming. Well, they've already gone through 3 general managers and I believe 8 coaches, if I'm not mistaken, over the course of this 13-year drought. And you obviously don't want to follow suit. You don't want a carbon copy of something like that. So this has been no fun in Ottawa here, missing the playoffs for as long as this team has. Can you imagine what Buffalo's going through? And it started out as a season of promise as well. The funny part about Buffalo is they've received some fantastic goaltending, like top 5 in the NHL since January 1st. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen has just dominated the league, and as a result, the Sabres have had great goaltending, winnable hockey goaltending-wise. Unfortunately, offensively, it's dried up. They have an inability now to not score enough goals, and they have the offense to do that. It's just been a collective dryness here for players who normally do score goals and win games, and that's the unfortunate part for Buffalo, because like Ottawa, they are close. they are getting closer.
We're down to the final 10% of the season, and the Sens, of course, can't make the playoffs. But the coach said there are things to accomplish, and the number one is the team has to build an identity. So I want to tap into your hockey brain.
Yeah.
Identity to me, if I'm hearing it correct, is I play for the Boston Bruins. That means I play tough, rugged hockey. I'm never out of a game. I fight till the end. That's your team identity. Am I right so far?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So does a hockey identity, because he wants the players to find it, does that come from management and coaching, or does it come from the players?
Well, it's got to come from the players. It's called buy-in, basically, and the players have to buy in to what the coaches are preaching. And if they don't do that, you just play helter-skelter hockey. It's individual hockey, and I think one of the things that this team is looking to do is play that proverbial full 60 minutes of hockey. Right now, the identity of this team has been this season its inconsistency to go from 1 minute of the first period to the final minute of the last period. And that's not winnable hockey. And obviously we see that, and we've seen the results from the Senators. Last night, they get up 5, regardless of the first period score. Their play, with the exception of a few plays in the second period, or a few minutes in the second period, their play was consistently good. And by that, it's a hard forecheck, a better backcheck, and a solid defensive play, and that's what Jacques Martin is trying to achieve and has been trying to achieve over the last few months.
I hear that as a fan, and I think it's coaches making an excuse. A team identity. If you're the Boston Bruins and you go out and you acquire through trade or through the draft a bunch of small, fast-moving defensemen, but they're lighter, they're not very rugged, and you build a forward line, the forward lines that are the same, I don't care what the history of the franchise has been or what the logo is on the jersey. You are the team that's been put together. And then management has to determine the kinds of players it has and push them in a certain direction, sure. But when I hear these players have to find their identity, what I'm hearing is the way this team is built, we don't know what we are, what we're good at, what we can do that the rest of the league can't. So I think you've got to look at the players you have. Decide what you want to be. If those players can't give it to you, to some degree, you got to go get the right players. You can't just put it all on the players either. I mean, this was not a very good team before the new coach came in. For 5 minutes, they were better. We saw some improvements. Then they slid backwards. They're on a bit of a hot streak right now. But I don't know what kind of team they are. Are they tough and rugged? Are they skilled and high speed? I don't know what they are.
Well, and I think that's what management has looked at over the last 3 months, right? The last 6 months, because they started in September looking at this and going, okay, we've got to identify what players we have, what style of play we want to play, and go from there. And it's been an evaluation process. This is a new general manager, a new owner, a new regime, and that's why. And I think I said this last week, there's probably going to be major surgery in the off season on this hockey club. All right, finding those players. If Steve Staios has said, okay, we have 6 or 7 players who are the core players on this team, we're building around them, we need a couple of 6'4", 220-pound defensemen to add to this. We're going to go out in the off season and look for those. So it's establishing the culture. And that is all part and parcel with identity, establishing a culture, establishing a work ethic, and I guess that eventually comes down to what style of play the general manager wants his team to play.
So and a lot easier if you have a successful history to draw on, too, right? Going back to the Bruins.
Absolutely.
They have a certain style of play, and they've had a lot of success over the years.
Well,
Montreal Canadiens, to me, they're high-flying skilled. That's what's made them win, but it's getting to be a while since they've won anything. The Leafs, well, what's their identity? They haven't won anything since 67, so it's hard to decide what kind of Leaf team is going to win, and same with Ottawa. It's not, especially the last 7 years, it's a team that doesn't even make the playoffs, so you can't draw on history. You need to start fresh and say, okay, who are we going to be going forward?
No, I disagree. You can draw on history, and they're trying to do that with the addition of Jacques Martin. The winningest coach in franchise history. And that's why he was brought in, to evaluate, to assess the situation, to offer his opinion on what has been going wrong with the team. 6 straight years before Jacques arrived, there were 6 straight years of postseason play, or without postseason play. So,
well, now we're defining winning, right? Is it a Stanley Cup, or is it getting in the playoffs? Is it getting to the finals? Is it?
That's
a hard one.
Bill. That's identity. If you're a losing team, your identity is you're not good enough. Your identity is this is going to be, for most teams, okay, it's just Ottawa, right? Or it's just Buffalo. Teams don't say that about the Montreal Canadiens this year in more one-goal games than any other team in the NHL. Why? Because they've established an identity that they are not going to quit. Even though they're undermanned or are underskilled, they are not going to quit, and they hang around in hockey games, and the stats show it. Team with the most one-goal games. They've lost majority of them, but they're in it, and it's a tough out. And that's, you know, teams that miss the playoffs. That's the number one establishment of that type of identity. We do not quit. Simple as that.
So tonight, it's the Blackhawks. They're young. They're a team of the future, but they're not a team of right now. So it's a winnable game, and it should be fun to watch.
No, absolutely. With Connor Bedard here, an 18-year-old with 53 points, worth the price of admission. I saw him.
And more.
Well, and then more. Yeah, absolutely. He really is. Incredible player.
Yeah, you've seen him play already, so you must be really looking forward to see him play again, because, I mean, he proves that one player alone can't win a hockey game because it takes more than one, but he could. One player alone can make it worth paying the price of admission, that's for sure.
Yeah,
he's one of those people.
Yep.
Can't wait. Thank you, Gord. Have a great long weekend. I'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Okay, Bill. Thank you, sir.
Gord Wilson, our hockey guy, making me understand it a little bit more. That's why you put a stupid guy in with me, like me in with, like, it's the Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll.
Take us with you on your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto through your iHeartRadio app. It's the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Good morning. It's Thursday. It's a long weekend. Feels like Friday. That is good enough for me. But let's get right to it, because do not adjust your set. What you heard right now in the news is true. We are not making it up. It's not a bad connection.
Sound off at 7.
You're doing what with our money now? The school board here in Ottawa, the public school board, has joined with 3 others across the province to sue Snapchat, TikTok, and Meta. Sue them. You might as well sue the moon to stop the tides. Why do they think this is something they have to take responsibility for? Seriously. How much money and energy are we going to put into this? Suing social media giants because it has rewired our kids' brains. It's changed how they think and how they learn, and that's made their job a lot more difficult. They've had to bring in extra people in order to deal with it, to try to reprogram our children's minds. Well, that's your job. Your job is to educate our children and offset other societal impacts. What is the point of suing TikTok, Meta, Snapchat? You really think that a couple of school boards in Ontario will put these behemoths out of business or make them change how they do business? It's not going to do anything. And you know what they're going to say? Well, somebody has to start it. We're going to show leadership here. We're going to lead the way on this, and others can join. Well, let me tell you, since you're using my money and PJ's money and Katie's money and you on the 416, your money and your money and your money and your money, let somebody else lead the charge on this. Just focus on what you're supposed to do. Educate our children. If you want to lobby the provincial government to try to do something, or the federal government to try to do something, okay, you can advocate on behalf of our kids. But a lawsuit, that's just going to make lawyers richer and all of us poorer. And it's not going to change a thing. Oh, I don't think I'm way out on a limb here. I mean, I feel like I was sitting back, relaxing, listening to the newscast, and I heard it. Now, Katie sent this to me earlier, and I read the headline. I thought, I was still sleepy. That can't be right. It's got some weird thing there. And then I hear it on the newscast. No, that's really what's happening. We are suing these media giants as if you're going to change the world. I think it's really funny that they're suing Meta. They're basically what, Facebook and Instagram? How many kids are on Facebook? That's right. That sounds like an old person's idea of what social media is. We got to sue Facebook to stop these kids from using the Facebook all the time. Instagram, maybe a little bit more. Snapchat, probably many of them there. And TikTok, it's certainly, it's habitual. And maybe it changes the way your child's brain is wired so that they expect information in a shorter, more compelling kind of way. Well, then, become better teachers. Look at TikTok as a model. If that's how the kids think, then you got to play to that. Because you're not changing the world here. There are jurisdictions like Florida's just passed a law making it illegal for kids under 14 to use social media. I guess you could try that, but that's not a school board thing. This is way above their pay grade. Sound the alarm, absolutely, but spend money on a lawsuit that you know is going to go nowhere and change nothing? Unbelievable. They're not even good at what they're supposed to be doing, especially the public board here in Ottawa. It's been so dysfunctional for so long. And now this is what they're focusing on? Focus on your job. Not on this. I'm almost speechless in it. The problem is speechless in this job. It's not a good thing. I gotta say something. But I'm so frustrated. I'm apoplectic almost on this one. If you've been using TikTok and you don't know what that means, it means you're angry to the point of almost being speechless. At least I think. I learned that on TikTok. I gotta tell you though. My son, I can't believe how informed he is on issues in the news. I can't. I'll bring something up to him. Yeah, I heard about that. Now, he doesn't have a lot of detail on it, but I'll say, how'd you learn that? Well, I saw it on TikTok. He's learning something on TikTok. Maybe it's not ideal. Maybe it's not deep enough, but it's a starting point. I don't know. Feels like my 19-year-old is a lot more informed about the world than I was at 19. So there's an upside to these social media companies as well. Suing TikTok, please. 7:16, it's the morning rush. I'm going mad. Free market system then, because what does the government care about that? Just why is it unfair? If I own a home, I had to build up a down payment in the first place and put that money down and save and work hard. Whereas rent, I just come up with first and last month's rent. So why is it fundamentally unfair? I don't agree with that. Are rents too high? Yes. Is inflation out of control? Yes. Well, that's a lot of that is at least partly on him. This is a guy who allowed unchecked immigration. Did you see the latest numbers? We're talking about almost 41 million people in Canada right now at any given time. A lot of them temporary, but 41 million people. We brought in more people last year than we have since 1957 without any thought to where they were going to live. He was in control of that. Now it's fundamentally unfair that people who buy houses actually have equity built in. You know what else? He really is more of a socialist than I ever believed. There's also risk when you buy a house because housing prices have been going up, but occasionally they go down. I bought a house once in the 80s. The market crashed. I lost $100,000 on that home because I had to move and I couldn't wait. I lost $100,000. It took me a decade to make up that loss. There's risk when you buy a home. There's no guarantee, and it's expensive. You rent a property, and the roof needs to be repaired. You just tell the landlord, hey, my roof is leaking. Fix it. You own the home. You're out 20 grand right there, maybe more, to fix the roof. So come on. Wow, we're really getting inside this guy's mind now. Not a lot there, but there's a lot of reverb, but it's fundamentally unfair. He was in Vancouver. He says his government is working to support renters now across the country.
We're announcing new protections for renters and new pathways to home ownership. As part of our upcoming budget, we're going to create a Canadian Renters Bill of Rights. It would create a nationwide standard for lease agreements, give renters a clear history of apartment pricing so they can bargain fairly, and make sure they have more agency.
Have you written the Canadian citizenship test lately? Or any time in your life? I wrote it in my life. One of the things they wanted to know is, do you understand the difference between a municipal government, a provincial government, and a federal government, and what they all do? Right? Justin Trudeau doesn't pick up your garbage. That's the municipal government. Education, that's the provincial government, although we elect trustees municipally, but the provinces control in control of education. Immigration, which has been unchecked in this country recently, in fact, more than that, deliberately allowed to bloat the country beyond our ability to house people, that's federal jurisdiction. I'm curious, though, how is rent and housing federal? How's he going to do that? And, you know, it was my first thought when I heard this yesterday. And a lot of people who are smarter than I am about the Constitution and the structure of the country are asking the same question. How's he going to do that? Is he going to, I mean, there are landlord-tenant dispute mechanisms in place, but they're all provincially run. So how does he do this exactly? I don't know. It says it's going to be partly about money. There's going to be a $15 million tenant protection fund, which would pay provincial legal aid groups to help tenants against unfairly rising rents, renovations, or renovictions, rather. That's where they say they're going to renovate so they can throw you out. Or bad landlords.
We're also going to launch a new legal aid fund that will protect tenants against unfairly rising rents, renovictions, and bad landlords.
And bad landlords. So this is where I'm confused. If he's putting money in to pay for provincial legal aid groups, that means it's going to be fought in provincial court. So it's going to be provincial law. So how does the federal government dictate provincial law? Honestly, I'm at a loss there, and we're not asking enough questions about that. I'm sure as smart people let it sink in, they're going to say, so how does this work exactly? Maybe he's got a workaround. I don't know. The Canadian Renters Bill of Rights would also need partnerships with provinces and territories to require landlords to disclose a history of unit pricing and create a national standard for lease agreements. I'm wondering if it requires more than just a partnership on those issues, that this is going to be in some way tied to funding. Hey, if the province wants more funding, then you're going to have to create laws to protect tenants. But we'll see. The Deputy Prime Minister, Chrystia Freeland, says the no-holds-barred plan will help young Canadians wrestle down the cost of owning and renting a home.
We need to make real the promise of Canada for younger Canadians, and we are going to pull every single lever and push every single button to deliver more housing without delay.
Okay, so now I got another stupid me. I got lots of stupid questions today. Forget about the jurisdictional issue and who's to blame for getting us here in the first place. Let's consider now there are three of us, and there are two homes available to rent. Katie's being thrown out of her home through renoviction. PJ already has a home. I need a home. Okay? I need a home. There are two houses to rent. There are three of us looking. So they're throwing out Katie. Boom! I can move in. Excellent. Katie's now homeless. Oh, we don't want that. We don't want Katie to be homeless. Let's give her more power so that she can't be thrown out. So Katie gets to stay. But here I am. I'm still homeless. You're just deciding who wins and loses in the battle over the limited housing stock. It doesn't change anything. It doesn't create more availability. In fact, it could have the opposite effect. Because now what I'm counting on, since Katie can't be thrown out of the apartment and PJ's not planning to move, I need someone to build a new rental property so that I can move in and rent it. Okay, so we need to get someone to build. Now, if a potential landlord out there, someone with money to invest, is he going to be more or less likely to invest now that Katie or me, once I move in, are going to have more power and he's not going to be able to get rid of me if he needs to rise? You know, the cost of everything increases for landlords. They're not, it's not magic. You're a landlord. You might have a mortgage on the home. That mortgage is going up. You got to pay for that. You got to pay for the renovations. You got to pay for insurance. And you need to pass that along to tenants, or you wouldn't be in the business in the first place. They're not doing it out of the goodness of their heart. That's not how our system works. So this could discourage people from getting into the housing industry in the first place as landlords. This makes zero sense to me. I can't wait to see how it all unfolds in the budget. 729, it's the Morning Rush.
Was it over when he unbuttoned my blouse? Come here, I whispered in your ear.
Join the conversation on the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll. Text 580-580 right now.
Let's see if we can figure out exactly what the Prime Minister has in mind here to help people who rent properties. How this fixes the shortage, I'm not entirely sure. But let's walk through it here with Steve Pomeroy, head of Focus Consulting Incorporated, a housing policy research consultant group based right here in Ottawa. Good morning, Steve.
Morning, Bill.
So I disagree with the Prime Minister's premise right off the top that there's something fundamentally unfair about paying $2,000 a month for rent while someone paying the same for a mortgage gets equity and can build their credit score. Well, yeah, but you can also lose money in housing. There's no guarantee that you make money when you buy a house. People often lose money on houses and they have to maintain them and spend a lot of money on that. There's a risk that goes along with it. Plus, you have to come up with the money to make the initial investment. But I'm a capitalist, Steve, so I'm not sure I agree with that. Do you understand where he's coming from on that?
Yeah, well, I guess the announcement had sort of three elements to it. You know, this idea of a bill of rights to protect renters, the credit rating thing that you just mentioned, and funding to organizations that tenant support kind of organizations. I think in the main, I mean, it does reflect the government's desire to appear to be doing something about what everybody describes as a crisis in terms of the housing system and particularly the big increases in rents. But to some extent, I'm with you. I think this is more about making an announcement as opposed to something that's actually practical and doable.
Yeah, I would underline the word appearance there when you used it. I think you chose that word very carefully there, and I agree with you. It looks like something, but can it actually be something? Are you also confused about jurisdiction here? I mean, landlord and tenant disputes have been traditionally adjudicated provincially. I don't know how he's going to design a bill of rights and enforce it at the federal level.
Yeah, I'm entirely with you on that one as well. I mean, I think, you know, this is a classic case of, you know, we've kind of moved into an era these days of what I would sort of describe as competitive federalism as opposed to cooperative federalism. So instead of basically trying to work together, I mean, all of the provincial premiers and housing ministers are agreeing there are housing problems. And I think sitting around the table and constructively coming up with thinking, well, this is your jurisdiction. We'd encourage you to do things like this. I mean, I can imagine how Quebec will react to this particular intrusion into, you know, property rights. And consumer protection are clearly provincial areas of provincial jurisdiction. And so I think they're basically setting themselves up for a gunfight. So at the end of the day, is that really going to help renters? I don't think so.
Yeah, and in this case, that's important. A lot of people roll their eyes about jurisdiction. They just want to be able to rent a property at a reasonable price and put a roof over their heads. So, but it is important because, yeah, if it's not doable legally, then it doesn't solve the problem. Let's imagine for a moment, though, he can find a way to make this work, whether it's from offering the provinces money in order to design provincial laws. I don't know. But let's say he makes it work. This idea that you have a bill of rights, so you, as a renter, you can bargain fairly. You'll get to see what the previous tenant was paying for a property. So you can now, you have a starting point to bargain. But in the end, isn't that just choosing how much people pay? It doesn't create one more rental unit. It's still the same number of people fighting over too few properties.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is a separate piece. I mean, there's the supply piece and getting supply done. I think they've got a bunch of other initiatives. They've already announced some. I'm sure they'll announce some more coming into the budget. But I mean, I think the issue that they're trying to get at here, the issue, you know, they've identified the issue correctly, which is we're seeing pretty significant increase in rents. When, you know, someone lives in a rental apartment for 8, 9, 10 years, they're under rent control, so the rent is, you know, limited to the annual increase, and that person leaves, and then meanwhile, the market has moved up quite a lot. So they may be paying 900, the market rent's now 1500, so you get a big jump of 600 bucks. And so we're, you know, a bunch of research I've been involved in has looked at the loss of the lower rent stock as a result of these big rent jumps that are occurring. And it is a very, very significant challenge in terms of, you know, we still have a bunch of low-income people, but we don't have low-rent units anymore. And so they're experiencing problems. And I think government is trying to address that particular concern. And I think the better way to do that would be to speak to the provinces. Right now, they can have a registry that basically says, here's what the landlord charged the previous tenant. But the provincial legislation is what actually allows the landlord to raise the rent to whatever the market will be bear with a new tenant. So the fact that you know what the previous tenant paid is irrelevant. Because the provincial legislation and the regulations allow that increase to happen. And if you want to actually slow down those big 14, 18, 20% increases that we're seeing on year-to-year rents, we really have to address the elephant in the room, which is the vacancy decontrol mechanism that's provincial legislation. And there is precedent for the federal government sitting down with the provinces and discussing this constructively. In 1975, when we had really, really high inflation, today's inflation doubles by comparison, but we had 12, 14% inflation in the mid-70s. And the federal government brought in price and rent, price and wage controls to try and bring down prices and wages. And as part of that package, because they didn't have jurisdiction, they actually asked the provinces to implement rent controls and limit rent increases for a few years. And all the provinces agreed to do it, even Alberta. So there is precedent just sitting down, as I say, and having that constructive conversation and trying to get the provinces to pull the levers where they've got jurisdiction and let the federal government stick to its knitting and do the things where it has jurisdiction.
Right, but you also have to be careful about unintended consequences. I don't disagree with you that you can fight it on two fronts. On one hand, you can make it more fair for tenants. On the other hand, you can address the lack of stock out there, housing stock. Okay, but you might also be adding to the second problem with this, as I think we did with rent controls. How do you incentivize someone from taking their money, investing it in a rental property, if you make it more and more difficult to be profitable doing that? I think this tips the scale even more in favor of the tenants, and in fact, long-term hurts them because prices go up anyway because there's just too little stock. So I think you can actually make the problem worse if you interfere too much on the supply and demand part of fundamental capitalism.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's certainly the argument that's always trotted out by the industry. But I think the evidence doesn't actually support that. I mean, I think what we've seen in the late 1980s, BC completely removed its rent controls at the behest of the industry and said, if you deregulate the market, we will build. They really didn't start building any rental housing. Ontario massively deregulated in 1998 on the same argument to government that if you basically deregulate the rental market, and they brought in the so-called Tenant Protection Act at the time, brought in vacancy decontrol, promised to build a lot, and they didn't for 20 years. So if when government deregulates, they don't build, it's telling us that there are a whole bunch of other factors that are influencing investor behavior as to why they do or don't build rental. It's not just the regulatory.
No, and it's difficult to predict, right, when there are so many moving parts and so many other issues. Yes, they clearly didn't build, and we didn't keep up with the population explosion that we're seeing in Canada either. Yeah. But I'm not sure you make it more likely for them to build by making it tougher to be a landlord because – you can't get the rent that you need to pay for the place. So
it's a question of balance. I mean, I think you can design a fair mechanism, and certainly we have tried to do that with mechanisms that say, well, new construction is exempt from rent controls for 10 years or some number of years. And because new construction, we're seeing here in Ottawa, we've seen a massive increase in new rental construction in the last number of years. Five times as many units as we were building for the previous 20 years. But those rents are coming on the market at 50, 60% higher than the average market rent. So we're getting supply, but not at the affordable level. And so basically, we don't care about regulating those units because they're not cheap anyway. We do care about regulating the older ones in the stock where low-income folks live and where the affordability is. And I think there's got to be some balance there so you can actually protect tenants without discouraging new construction, as you're suggesting.
Well, the Prime Minister got his 24 hours of looking like he's doing the right thing. Let's see if he can actually make it work when it may not even be federal jurisdiction. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
Steve Pomeroy is head of Focus Consulting Incorporated, a housing policy research consultant based right here in Ottawa. Not as easy as it sounds. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill. Morning again.
Good morning, morning. Have you ever heard of Caitlin Clark?
Nope.
She plays basketball. And she's seeming to be a big deal. I wasn't familiar with her. I think I've heard of her a couple of times, but she is trending today as she has received a path-breaking offer from, you know, maybe not the most expected person in my eyes, from Ice Cube, the rapper. You know, he's writing up the big three and what the team's going to look like for that. They made a massive offer to Caitlin Clark for her to join the league as she plays in the WNBA. And it's the first time a woman would ever be playing in the big three. So it's a big offer. And on top of that, it's $5 million to play
for 10 games.
10 games. That is insane amount of money.
And the highest.
I don't know what the big three is.
So
three on three basketball, I presume.
Yeah. So Caitlin Clark's in the NCAA right now. So she's playing in March Madness. Last year she lost in the finals, and she set the record for most points from anybody in NCAA basketball. So she's set to go to the WNBA next year, and the highest paid.
So hold on, she's playing with men.
Right now she's playing with women.
Okay,
gotcha.
Yep. She's set to go to the WNBA next year, and the highest paid woman in the WNBA is $250,000 a year.
Yeah.
So Ice Cube offered her $5 million for 10 games, and she can go to the WNBA next year to play in the big three, which would be against men, and she'd be the only woman to do it, ever.
Also, on top of that, earning money from merch and all of that kind of stuff, so the money is insane. And the big three hasn't confirmed the financial terms, but we did hear from Ice Cube. He posted a statement on X and is now starting to do some interviews on it as well.
You know, it's always 50-50 till we get a no, you know, at the end of the day. It is a generous offer. You know, and look, you know, we're in a new age. You know, it's like NIL. You know, when we came up with the idea, you know, our sponsors, our partners, they all want to make it happen. So, you know, we was able to make that generous offer.
He makes it sound so unexciting.
Yeah.
He does. Did somebody wake up Ice Cube? I think Ice Cube's starting to melt.
It sounds like, oh, she better take it. Like, it's a lot of money. Is she dumb? I know. But I think I could learn how to play basketball for 10 games for $5 million.
Well, you're almost as tall as she is.
There you go. How tall is she?
6 feet. I just looked it up.
Ah, nice. Yeah, I'm getting there.
It's tall for a woman. But, I mean, height isn't everything in basketball, but it is pretty important. So is this a gimmick, or could she actually play as well as the men in 3-on-3?
Well, the 3-on-3 isn't like, I don't think it's as, I'm not a big basketball fan. It's not as physical as the NBA.
And the NBA.
So you have space, so skill could be more important. Mm-hmm.
And she's a fantastic shooter. So this year at the All-Star game for the NBA, they took her versus Stephen Curry, who's arguably the best shooter of all time. And they did like a competition against each other, and she almost beat him.
Wow.
So she's got a great shot, and, you know, it's called the Big Three, is this 3-on-3 tournament, right? Mm-hmm. And I think she would do fine.
I'm excited. Yeah.
In the end,
it
doesn't matter if her name and the excitement around it brings people in to watch, and then she deserves to get paid.
Money well spent.
Yeah. Good for her. It's sadly, I don't have a 6 foot tall basketball female in my family, or I'd be
pretty
more excited about it. But well, that's interesting.
They're still young.
Thank you, Ice Cube, for getting us all pumped up this morning. We appreciate it. It's 8 o'clock. It's the morning rush. Good morning. Feels like Friday today because it's a Thursday of a long weekend. So just enjoy that thought.
This is News Talk 580. CF. This is The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
The Ottawa-Carleton District School Board is suing the social media giants. There are a couple of other boards of education in Ontario doing the same thing, but they're actually separate lawsuits. And I'm a parent. There are times when I want to grab my kids and drag them out of bed where they've been awake for the last hour and a half, a couple of teenagers, flipping through TikTok. Just flip, 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 flip. It is unbelievably frustrating watching them turn into idiots right in front of my eyes. And then I'll go on TikTok and I realize, oh, that was 20 minutes. Now I'm doing it. It's very addictive. Does it rewire the way we think? I don't know. I'm not the expert on that. Should we do something about it? Maybe. Is this the answer? Not so sure. Pino Buffone is Director of Education at the Ottawa-Carleton District School Board and joins me on the line now. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
What's the problem you're trying to solve? How does this impact on our kids' education?
The reason for our lawsuit against the social media giants is really twofold in nature. It's related, Bill, to the achievement and well-being of our students. These social media platforms, and I want to be clear here that I'm not discouraging in any way the use of technology in our classrooms. In fact, I'm encouraging that. I think there's tremendous potential for that. What we're talking about here is the intentional design of some software platforms that purposefully, much to your introductory comment, are purposefully created to encourage compulsive use. There's intermittent variable rewards, manipulation in essence, in these platforms that cause disruption to our education system, predominantly the learning and well-being or wellness of our students.
Yeah, I'm also surprised, though, sometimes at what my kids know about that's going on in the world. They're actually getting some information through TikTok. It's not very in-depth, maybe, but sometimes I feel like they know more about current affairs than I did at their same age. So I don't think that they get nothing out of it. But is the science there to back you up? Do we know that this is having a negative impact on our ability to educate our kids?
We know that the science is backing up the disruption it's causing. I think you raise a valid point. As I said, the utilization of technology is a wonderful thing in our classrooms. We know that this is causing a disruption, and we're arguing here that the social media giants also know that the way they're creating some of these algorithms are causing disruption and harm in disruption in learning and harm in the wellness of our students. And what we're looking for primarily is for them to redesign their tools so that there can be safer use as a safeguard for our students.
Isn't it up to the school board, though, to educate our kids based on the world they live in and that this stuff is beyond your control? All you can do is adapt to it?
There's a piece here for all aspects of society to play. As educators, we have an acceptable use of information technology policy procedure for our students and teaching our students about etiquette around the utilization of technology, no question. But we're also arguing here that some of these social media giants understand that what they're developing, the intentional design of these products is very much to create habit formation that is a concern. And it's a fallout in terms of learning. We've got attention issues, distraction in class, targeted challenges or competitions that cause harm or issues for the organization and for our student, staff, and school communities, and then cyberbullying and online peer pressure. So no question we've got to work with our students to learn how to utilize the technology, but we're arguing here that social media giants are aware that what they're doing is causing harm and that we're looking for a redesign of their products.
Pino Buffone is on the line with me, Director of Education, Ottawa-Carleton District School Board. Okay, so let's accept the premise, and I don't totally reject it, that's for sure, that this is something that needs doing. Why you, though? Why us? This feels like you're standing on a beach and there's a tsunami coming towards us and you got your hands out trying to stop it. I mean, it's a big country. It's a big planet. These are media giants. Why are we in Ottawa taking on this fight?
Well, Bill, it's not just me and it's not just us. A number of districts, including some in the GTA, are involved in this lawsuit. This is an issue. You know, Bill, I visit schools every week. I try to get to a school a week just to learn from the magic in teaching and learning environments. And this is an issue that our students have raised as a concern. It's impacting the learning, as I mentioned. It's impacting their wellness and their well-being. And even our parents and guardians are expressing this concern, how it is that they help manage their own kids with social media. South of the border, a number of districts are also taking on lawsuits or litigation with social media giants to have them address something that they acknowledge they're doing in the manipulation of these platforms.
But there are a lot of things that go on in the world that disrupt kids' education. Kids are, in many cases, homeless, or they don't get enough food, and those are battles that should be fought. But, Pino, why the Ottawa-Carleton District School Board? This seems like you got to be focusing on educating our children, not fighting a worldwide battle.
I think, Bill, for us at the Ottawa-Carleton District School Board, this is focusing on educating our students. We understand that the issues that have really evolved over time around social media are having a tremendous impact on learning both inside and outside the classroom. As I mentioned, attention issues. You know, Bill, over 90% of our students in grades 7 to 12 indicate that they use social media daily, with close to half of them for over 5 hours a day. Whether that's in the classroom context or beyond the classroom, that's a huge impact on the kind of time our youth are spending with the return.
Okay, but why not then focus on controlling how much access they have to these platforms in school and educate parents to make sure their kids spend less time on them at home? I mean, it just feels like this is just way above your pay grade as the director of education at a local school district. What are we? Who's going to pay for it, and how much is it going to cost?
So a couple of pieces. One, your point around working with parents and guardians, working with our staff, we continue to do that. They continue to mention it's an increasingly difficult task to help manage this. That's why we're looking at the social media giants who are able to adjust and redesign their platforms is a key point. But also, we're seeing the fallout in terms of the supports for mental health, the issues around bullying, self-esteem, anxiety, nervousness that our students are mentioning. This is causing a redirection of our resources, which are limited. To your point, we are a school board. We don't control all of what takes place in society, but this is having a detrimental impact on our time, energy, efficiency, and effectiveness. And that's part of the reason why we've issued this litigation, is that it's impacting all facets of our ability to focus on achievement and well-being, which are our dual core mandate.
Well, you've restated your argument, but I didn't grow up on TikTok, so it's not lost on me. You didn't answer the question, which is, what's this going to cost us?
So the legal firms are working out the dollar amounts in the litigation. There's no cost to the school boards to get engaged in the litigation at this point in time. This is really something that's a multi-board lawsuit that is being brought forward with a dollar amount for compensation for the kind of impact this has had on our mental health and well-being to date and likely into the future until we've got our social media giants redesigning the platforms they're creating.
There is some cost, though, in your time, I would imagine, as well, and other members of your board.
There's a minimal cost in terms of our legal preparation, but to be frank, it's minor in comparison, Bill, to the kind of cost this is costing day in and day out in our schools.
Well, why not put that energy into lobbying the provincial government to do something about this, at least deeper pockets, a little more power, or the federal government to get involved and pass legislation? This idea of a lawsuit against these giants just seems like a waste of everybody's time and energy to me. Do you really think you can win?
We're very confident, Bill, that with the acknowledgement of the social media giants, that the way they set up these platforms is indeed intentional in nature, and the fact that it's impacting us directly. We're working with the provincial government. Of course, federal government has an Online Harms Act. They've also addressed or acknowledged the concerns this is causing in society more widely. But we're leaders of public education in our own context, and we're asking the social media giants to relook at this and to hold them accountable, because it is impacting us directly daily.
So before I let you go, this will never cost taxpayers a penny?
No, we've got some minor incidental costs that come with the day-to-day issuing of a lawsuit, but it's really, Bill, well beyond that. That's the dollar amount is secondary. We're asking the social media giants to change the way they design things. There's a minimal cost in the day-to-day work we do, like my time here on media this morning, but by and large, relative to the impact this is having on other pressures it's causing, it's very minimal.
And this went to the board and the trustees voted in favor of it?
Yes.
Thank you for your time today. Appreciate it, Pino.
My pleasure.
Pino Buffonet, the Director of Education, Ottawa-Carleton District School Board. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning. Absolutely. I put out a couple of brush fires, right, Katie?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And then you wouldn't be demanding a raise, because he'd be, a nice high-paid firefighting job.
I'll take it.
Here's the surprise, though. Everyone is talking about this in our neighborhood, because Manitick's one of those areas you can actually have a backyard fire. and people along the river do it all the time. We'd like to do it this weekend, right? The weather's going to be sunny, but not warm yet. Be nice to have a fire, and there's going to be farmers burning brush and stuff. But the surprise is not that there's a burn ban this early. The surprise to me is it's only 2 weeks ahead of schedule this year, according to Ottawa Fire's spokesperson, Nick DeFazio.
Usually there is a burn ban put on in the 1st of April, but this year, obviously, we didn't get much snow. And normally right now we'd be dealing with flooding, but we're not. We're dealing with brush fires.
Can't blame it all on nature, though. He says a lot of these fires are preventable.
Something as simple as flicking your cigarette out the window, we say don't do that. That causes a lot of calls, a lot of brush fires. And these things can spread really fast, you know, because of the dry conditions or the wind. It picks up and it goes real quick and gets out of control.
Who's still flipping cigarettes out of their moving car in 2024? People don't see it as litter, huh? It's the weirdest thing. You would never throw a, I don't know, Tim Hortons wrapper out of your car now. Very few people would ever do that. But I see this all the time driving along. This, you see this little red glow flying out of the window and little sparks come off it. And of course it could start a fire. Don't be ridiculous. The other issue he says, though, is that people hear the burn ban and then they just ignore it. Because you think you can control it, right? You've got a contained area and it'll be fine. But the wind comes up and the embers fly off and it's so dry. So there are two effects. It could take the embers away from your controlled area, and then the ember sits there with wind blowing on it. What happens when you blow on embers in your fireplace? You get a flame. You feed the oxygen to it, and poof, up it goes. So, yeah, let's be a little bit careful out there. It's too bad. I'd like to have a little campfire at this time of year, but we'll let you know when the fire ban is lifted. It's 8:28. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning.
The Inbox.
Just wow. The inbox is bursting at the seams today. Here's what I'm going to do. I've never done this before, but Katie and I have one rule for this show. There are no rules. We have guidelines we like to follow, but sometimes you got to break the rules. I'm splitting this segment into two. And right now I'm going to give you the reaction to Justin Trudeau's Renters Bill of Rights. Then after the news, I have this many responses that you wouldn't believe it. After the news, I'll give you the reaction out there to the other big story this morning. That is the Ottawa School District suing the social media giants. It wasn't just me who woke up on the wrong side of the bed. These are crazy stories. Good morning. Christopher Freeland says it all. We will press every button and pull every lever because, you know why? Because the Liberal government doesn't know what the heck they're doing. What about all the bad tenants? Where's the help for the landlord? How many landlords sit and have to wait 6 to 8 months without any rent just to be heard? He is Justin Trudeau, a quack, no doubt about it, says Lisa from Richmond. If there are three of you and only two places available, knowing how much the previous rent was doesn't help you negotiate a better rental price. Supply and demand dictates that. People don't negotiate with landlords. Thank God someone accepted them and just pay whatever they have to. How out of touch can he be? Just wow, says Jeff. Good morning, Bill. I had three units that I rented. I'm selling two due to all the rules. The other one is rented to a friend. You take on all the chances, the higher interest rates, the higher condo fees, restricted in raising rent. And if the market does go down, you take the loss. They will find there are less and less rentals in the market, says Maureen. Yeah, his basic premise this morning, I guess he really isn't a capitalist. Because he said that there's something fundamentally wrong with, how did he put it? He said there's something fundamentally unfair about paying $2,000 a month for rent while someone paying the same for a mortgage gets equity and can build their credit scores. Yeah, but they have all the costs that go along with that. That's just the way it works. Why doesn't Justin just take care of his own house and get people back to the office where there are empty buildings and space? Hey, Bill, OMG, Trust Fund Trudy is just out of ideas and grasping. All I hear in that clip of him is blah, blah, bureaucracy, blah, blah, half-baked idea, blah, blah. He's never had to rent and clearly doesn't know how this works. This will accomplish nothing. Bill, I work hard and have to pay rent. Don't look down on us renters. I'm not looking down on renters. I'm just saying that you don't have some God-given right to collect equity if you didn't take the risk and buy. That doesn't mean I'm not sympathetic. The price of rent is too high. Big reason for that, we opened the doors. We now have 40-plus million people living here on any given day, some of them temporary. And we never thought about, hey, we need more workers. Bring them in. Okay, where are they going to sleep? Yeah, we don't know. But I'll give you a renter's bill of rights. If he can even do that, I still want the answer to that question. How's that federal jurisdiction? Patton Karp says, how can you bargain if there are 10 other people behind you who will pay the rent at the asking price because there's a shortage? I don't know. You'd have to ask the prime minister. Somehow, because I know Katie used to pay $500 a month, I say, well, she paid five. I'll give you five. PJ says, well, I need a place to live. I'll give you $550. Well, I need a place to live more than you do. I'll give you $600. I'll give you seven. Make it eight. I have eight. Do I hear nine? I have eight over here. I hear eight over here. We're going strong. It's a beautiful apartment downtown Toronto. It's going for eight. You're going to have to move. You can't live in Ottawa. I have one in Ottawa. It's $900. You want to give me $900? Do I hear $950? $950. But I know the price the last guy paid. Okay, so what? You're not the last guy. We'll continue with the inbox. Switch it up a little bit. I could go on and on. I seriously have, Katie, at least half a dozen more here. And a lot of them really in-depth. None of them supporting Justin Trudeau's Bill of Rights for renters. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning.
Play or Android Auto. Now, the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll continues on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
I'd like to know more about this deal between the province and Ottawa. There was a time when I would just say that on the air, and Doug Ford, whether he was a city council member or just the brother of the mayor, I would say, wish I could hear from him, and he would call. Now, he's in Ottawa right now, but I don't know if they have this station on. Well, we've reached out to him, did so in just the last couple of minutes. Didn't know this big deal was going to come down. So we're still working on that one. It's an outside chance right now. I know he had a breakfast, and then he's got some event at 10 o'clock today too as well. So I want to continue with the inbox here for a minute because we got so many responses to Justin Trudeau's new renter's bill of rights. And then the story that broke this morning about our school board, this is the public school board in Ottawa, suing the social media giants because they've addicted our kids to their programs and they've changed how they think and it makes them harder to educate. We're doing our own lawsuit. Other boards in Ontario are also doing them, but they're separate. I don't know why they wouldn't at least team up, but even there, I don't think it's a good idea. But it's the public and Catholic in Toronto and the Peel Public School Board. Good morning. Regarding the school boards, I'm far more concerned about how our tax dollars are spent towards indoctrinating our children than what social media apps do and what should the parents' responsibility be. These kids aren't supposed to use them as per the board's own policies. The incompetence of the school boards are 25% of the reason I moved out of Ottawa to Chrysler. Love the show. And it's signed Matt. Hi, Bill. OMG, a couple of school boards suing Meta. What the? Stay in your lane. How about they focus on what their job is? Run an effective school system. Who are these jokers, Bill? It's akin to the city of Vancouver suing Big Oil for climate change. That's cute. Bill, if the Ottawa Public School Board loses the suit against the social media giant companies, what happens if they request their costs be repaid? Will all students in Ontario suffer with reduced resources to pay this, or just students in the four boards? Serious question. Mom in Canada with kids in the English Catholic Board. Don't know the answer to that. Hi, Bill. It's not going to cost us a penny. Don't worry. We've been reassured. I like how the director of the Board of Education, though. Did you notice? It was a little passive-aggressive shot. I just want you to know. I did catch it, but I didn't want to get into it with him, but you know, I use some of my time in this lawsuit. I get paid to do these things, like talking to you right now. Yeah, because talking to the media in your city about how you're spending our money, which is your responsibility, is the same as spending your time and our money suing an international media giant. You can't compare those two things. One is your job, the other is not. Hi, Bill. After working at the OCDSB for 28 years, a good many working an administrative job with the Board of Trustees, I can say they've totally lost it. They're in the education business. Do not take our funds to take on a legal battle. How about restricting their access at school and, yes, teaching them about the pitfalls? Isn't that their role? Bill, do you mean to say that the students in high schools are sitting there on their phones during class? Is that the disruption that the school board is finding? That's the case. They shouldn't be allowed any phones in the classroom. That's ridiculous. And parents need to say, just say, listen, turn the phone off. Where are the parents? Why aren't the teachers laying down the law? We've never had such liberties as kids, says Donna. Now, the argument isn't just that they're using them in school. It's that they're deliberately being made addicts of the social media, and the social media companies know that. And it's changing the way they think and making it difficult to educate them. So the argument is a little more sophisticated than just take away the phone. And he was clear on that. So Ron in Stittsville, biggest takeaway from the interview with the OCDSB, he tries to visit one school a week. The director of education doesn't even visit his own schools more than once a week. That's the problem right there. OCDSB is mismanaged and focused on the wrong priorities. Shut them down. Hello, how about school board suing Facebook? What a waste of money and time. Only the lawyers will win. School boards should put efforts in training and supporting parents in usage and access. Ridiculous that parents can't parent anymore, says Julia in Ottawa. This is the only other another example of the very poor parenting going on in society. Without a doubt, that is our biggest problem. And I could go on and on and on and on and on. Can I just flip back to one last comment that came in just in the last couple of minutes? We're going back to the Renter's Bill of Rights. Jay says, I'm old enough to remember liberals saying they couldn't do anything about the housing for just that reason. The reason, I guess, that I stated, which is that even their jurisdiction? You're old enough to remember that, are you? Well, let's do a fact check on that.
Housing isn't a primary federal responsibility. It's not something that we have direct carriage of.
No, I'm sorry. That must be fake news. I didn't hear that right. Jay, maybe you are old enough to remember. By the way, you don't have to be that old. That's just a few years ago. Play that again.
Housing isn't a primary federal responsibility. It's not something that we have direct carriage of.
Jay also says, I'm old enough to remember them saying they couldn't direct banks, but now they want to direct them to give mortgages based on rental payment history. Yeah, I didn't have time to find a clip for that, but I'll trust you. You've established your credibility. Oh, my. I think this is just an announcement that goes nowhere, but for a moment we all felt better and like he's on our side. But I guess we'll see. Hey, great idea for a new show that we're adding to this station on the weekend. I didn't even get an order from management to interview this person. I thought, we've wanted to do something maybe once a week on this for a long time. Gaming. It's a huge entertainment industry. And it's not just kids. There's a generation or more of people who grew up gaming, and that's how they spend a lot of their leisure time. So we're going to meet the host of This Week in Gaming, which begins this weekend. Naomi Kyle is going to join us coming up next on The Morning Rush.
This This is The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
The Ottawa Carleton District School Board is suing the social media giants. There are a couple of other boards of education in Ontario doing the same thing, but they're actually separate lawsuits. And I'm a parent. There are times when I want to grab my kids and drag them out of bed where they've been awake for the last hour and a half, a couple of teenagers, flipping through TikTok. Just flip, 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 flip. It is unbelievably frustrating watching them turn into idiots right in front of my eyes. And then I'll go on TikTok and I realize, oh, that was 20 minutes. Now I'm doing it. It's very addictive. Does it rewire the way we think? I don't know. I'm not the expert on that. Should we do something about it? Maybe. Is this the answer? Not so sure. Pino Buffone is Director of Education at the Ottawa-Carleton District School Board and joins me on the line now. Good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
What's the problem you're trying to solve? How does this impact on our kids' education?
The reason for our lawsuit against the social media giants is really twofold in nature. It's related, Bill, to the achievement and well-being of our students. These social media platforms, and I want to be clear here that I'm not discouraging in any way the use of technology in our classrooms. In fact, I'm encouraging that. I think there's tremendous potential for that. What we're talking about here is the intentional design of some software platforms that purposefully, much to your introductory comment, are purposefully created to encourage compulsive use. There's intermittent variable rewards, manipulation in essence, in these platforms that cause disruption to our education system, predominantly the learning and well-being or wellness of our students.
Yeah, I'm also surprised, though, sometimes at what my kids know about that's going on in the world. They're actually getting some information through TikTok. It's not very in-depth, maybe, but sometimes I feel like they know more about current affairs than I did at their same age. So I don't think that they get nothing out of it. But is the science there to back you up? Do we know that this is having a negative impact on our ability to educate our kids?
We know that the science is backing up the disruption it's causing. I think you raise a valid point. As I said, the utilization of technology is a wonderful thing in our classrooms. We know that this is causing a disruption, and we're arguing here that the social media giants also know that the way they're creating some of these algorithms are causing disruption and harm in disruption and learning and harm in the wellness of our students. And what we're looking for primarily is for them to redesign their tools so that there can be safer use as a safeguard for our students.
Isn't it up to the school board, though, to educate our kids based on the world they live in and that this stuff is beyond your control? All you can do is adapt to it?
There's a piece here for all aspects of society to play. As educators, we have an acceptable use of information technology, policy, and procedure for our students, and teaching our students about etiquette around the utilization of technology, no question. But we're also arguing here that some of these social media giants understand that what they're developing, the intentional design of these products is very much to create habit formation that is a concern. And it's a fallout in terms of learning. We've got attention issues, distraction in class, targeted challenges or competitions that cause harm or issues for the organization and for our student, staff, and school communities, and then cyberbullying and online peer pressure. So no question we've got to work with our students to learn how to utilize the technology, but we're arguing here that social media giants are aware that what they're doing is causing harm and that we're looking for a redesign of their products.
Pino Buffone is on the line with me, Director of Education, Ottawa-Carleton District School Board. Okay, so let's accept the premise, and I don't totally reject it, that's for sure, that this is something that needs doing. Why you, though? Why us? This feels like you're standing on a beach and there's a tsunami coming towards us and you got your hands out trying to stop it. I mean, it's a big country. It's a big planet. These are media giants. Why are we in Ottawa taking on this fight?
Well, Bill, it's not just me and it's not just us. A number of districts, including some in the GTA, are involved in this lawsuit. This is an issue. You know, Bill, I visit schools every week. I try to get to a school a week just to learn from the magic in teaching and learning environments. And this is an issue that our students have raised as a concern. It's impacting the learning, as I mentioned. It's impacting their wellness and their well-being. And even our parents and guardians are expressing this concern, how it is that they help manage their own kids with social media. South of the border, a number of districts are also taking on lawsuits or litigation with social media giants to have them address something that they acknowledge they're doing in the manipulation of these platforms.
But there are a lot of things that go on in the world that disrupt kids' education. Kids are, in many cases, homeless, or they don't get enough food, and those are battles that should be fought. But, Pino, why the Ottawa-Carleton District School Board? This seems like you got to be focusing on educating our children, not fighting a worldwide battle.
I think, Bill, for us at the Ottawa-Carleton District School Board, this is focusing on educating our students. We understand that the issues that have really evolved over time around social media are having a tremendous impact on learning both inside and outside the classroom. As I mentioned, attention issues. You know, Bill, over 90% of our students in grades 7 to 12 indicate that they use social media daily, with close to half of them for over 5 hours a day. Whether that's in the classroom context or beyond the classroom, that's a huge impact on the kind of time our youth are spending with the return.
Okay, but why not then focus on controlling how much access they have to these platforms in school and educate parents to make sure their kids spend less time on them at home? I mean, it just feels like this is just way above your pay grade as the director of education at a local school district. What are we? Who's going to pay for it, and how much is it going to cost?
So a couple of pieces. One, your point around working with parents and guardians, working with our staff, we continue to do that. They continue to mention it's an increasingly difficult task to help manage this. That's why we're looking at the social media giants who are able to adjust and redesign their platforms is a key point. But also, we're seeing the fallout in terms of the supports for mental health, the issues around bullying, self-esteem, anxiety, nervousness that our students are mentioning. This is causing a redirection of our resources, which are limited. To your point, we are a school board. We don't control all of what takes place in society, but this is having a detrimental impact on our time, energy, efficiency, and effectiveness. And that's part of the reason why we've issued this litigation, is that it's impacting all facets of our ability to focus on achievement and well-being, which are our dual core mandate.
Well, you've restated your argument, but I didn't grow up on TikTok, so it's not lost on me. You didn't answer the question, which is, what's this going to cost us?
So the legal firms are working out the dollar amounts in the litigation. There's no cost to the school boards to get engaged in the litigation at this point in time. This is really something that's a multi-board lawsuit that is being brought forward with a dollar amount for compensation for the kind of impact this has had on our mental health and well-being to date and likely into the future until we've got our social media giants redesigning the platforms they're creating.
There is some cost, though, in your time, I would imagine, as well, and other members of your board.
There's a minimal cost in terms of our legal preparation, but to be frank, it's minor in comparison, Bill, to the kind of cost this is costing day in and day out in our schools.
But why not put that energy into lobbying the provincial government to do something about this, at least deeper pockets, a little more power, or the federal government to get involved and pass legislation? This idea of a lawsuit against these giants just seems like a waste of everybody's time and energy to me. Do you really think you can win?
We're very confident, Bill, that with the acknowledgement of the social media giants, that the way they set up these platforms is indeed intentional in nature, and the fact that it's impacting us directly. We're working with the provincial government. Of course, federal government has an Online Harms Act. They've also addressed or acknowledged the concerns this is causing in society more widely. But we're leaders of public education in our own context, and we're asking the social media giants to relook at this and to hold them accountable, because it is impacting us directly daily.
So before I let you go, this will never cost taxpayers a penny?
No, we've got some minor incidental costs that come with the day-to-day issuing of a lawsuit, but it's really, Bill, well beyond that. That's, the dollar amount is secondary. We're asking the social media giants to change the way they design things. There's a minimal cost in the day-to-day work we do, like my time here on media this morning, but by and large, relative to the impact this is having on other pressures it's causing, it's very minimal.
And this went to the board and the trustees voted in favor of it?
Yes.
Thank you for your time today. Appreciate it, Pino.
My pleasure.
Pino Buffonet, the Director of Education, Ottawa-Carleton District School Board. It's the Morning Rush. Good morning.
Now, the Morning Wrap.
Kind of the week wrap now, too, because we're gone until Monday. Patricia's joined PJ, Katie, and me. Good morning again, everybody. One last time. Not for you, Patricia. You still got a whole day ahead of you.
What?
Yeah.
A whole day? Don't have my mic on. It's going to be a long one.
It's not TV, you know. You don't have it on all the time with somebody listening in. Does that freak you out when you're sitting out there and somebody comes up and whispers, so what's going on with you and the... You're like, shh, shh, shh.
It freaks me out how long we've been doing it and how often we still forget. When Graham and I were on the desk together all the time, we'd get into the most interesting, to me anyway, conversations on a commercial break and then realize this conversation is being shared with 10 of our closest friends. And,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they
got
some
stories to tell.
Does the
wireless microphone make it all the way to the bathrooms?
Not even close. The bathrooms are in the opposite end of this building. These bathrooms make no sense.
Yeah, cool design, dude.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But I love the movie clips where someone takes the mic to the bathroom. There's a great Graham Norton clip about that. I know you want to talk about important stuff. Sometime you got to Google this and get on. There's a British comedian who does a whole thing about wearing the mic when he's going to the washroom. He's trying to teach kids at the same time. It's the best. Anyway.
Remember Leslie Nielsen and Naked Gun?
Yep. Yep.
Same thing.
Walked off stage.
He was a little flatulent and making groaning sounds and the whole thing.
Oversharing.
Our mayor presented the premier with a hashtag Team Ottawa t-shirt. And the premier said thanks and said, here's a $600 million shirt. Because they've agreed with some kind of new funding formula. We'll hear more. There's a press conference coming up. Do you know what time that is yet? I'd be curious to know if you're going to carry that.
I honestly do not know. We've heard a lot of the detail about what has come out already this morning. And Natalie is at City Hall and has been at the breakfast and all over that beat. So Natalie Van Roy will be covering that for us.
Curious to see how the mayor feels about the 174. There's some funding to maintain it.
Yeah.
Which is not nothing. But they're going to look at it over a three-year period, study it. To determine if they're going to take it over full time.
Well, we're hoping we might talk to Stephen Blay. Back when he was a counselor, he wanted that, right? Upload it back to the province, make it their responsibility after it was downloaded to the municipality. And I mean, what difference does that make for the people who are driving on it? We'll try to decipher that. But interesting announcement today.
I guess it means the costs are shared by everyone in Ontario, not just the people of Ottawa. But I don't know if this means anything, but the 174 feels like a provincial highway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a continuation of the Queensway for all intents and purposes, right? For all of us that are on there.
And I know they've done that with a couple of different former expressways that became provincial highways in Toronto. So I wouldn't be surprised if ultimately this happens. But I'm not surprised it didn't happen right away either, because it's going to be a budget consideration, I would think, as well. But
yeah.
Anyway, cash for that's pretty good. He also talked about the Barnsdale, the new entrance, the 460, but we heard that in the budget.
Yep.
So not a surprise there. Anyway, I'm curious to hear more about it. So you'll be doing that on your show.
Yeah, and I would also love to find out there's a lot of good news components in this, I think, for Ottawa, but are we still way behind when it comes to transit compared to Toronto, right? You know, there wasn't a whole lot in there in terms of funding our lovely public transit system. So how satisfied is the mayor with this agreement? Would love to get his take on that.
Yeah, you wonder if you could ever catch up with that. When you don't build a subway in the beginning, it's really expensive and complicated to do it later. And when you do above ground, it's disruptive. To that Eglinton extension they're doing in Toronto has been such a pain. It's St. Clair as well. Such a pain. You know, when I was on the air there at the time, they're talking about closing part of these roads down so they can build streetcar right-of-ways. It's interesting because here's the argument the mayor was making at the time. It will save commuters 5 minutes.
Mm.
You'd say, but it's going to be a traffic nightmare. It's only going to be an extra 5 minutes. Well, is 5 minutes a lot of time or not a lot of time? It's the same. It was exactly the same time. It'll save commuters five on the train, but it will cost you five in the car. It costs way more than five in the car, by the way.
My commute, I feel like I'm spending 5 minutes at every red light. I'll tell you, when I first went to Montreal for school and realized you could wait indoors for your public transit. And just when I grow up, Bill, a city with underground transportation is definitely for me.
It's life changing. I lived for a time at Bay and Bloor in Toronto, so very downtown. And I worked at Yonge and St. Clair. In the middle of winter, I went downstairs wearing just a sweater, waited for the subway. I only wore the sweater because I had to cross the street at St. Clair. The subway underground entrance came out across the road, but it was 2 seconds. And I'm not a big public transit guy. I don't like the crowds and the body odor and the people eating food, and it's awful. But when it's that convenient, you feel stupid taking the car.
Yeah. Here's how you know it's that convenient. I used to go in Montreal to cover games at the Big O. You remember that? You remember that stadium? That
piece of,
and players, sometimes opposition players, a couple Expos, would get on the metro to come back to around the area where I was staying at the Marriott that's right near the Bell Center because it was so much faster than getting on a team bus or getting into a car. So if you don't have helicopter access, underground transportation, right?
Way to go.
Well, remember the picture of William Nylander, a Toronto Maple Leaf player. He is notoriously just on time for meetings, team meetings. Hmm. And you can get fined for that. If teams don't like it if you're late, you can get disciplined for it. So when he's been known, when the car is just stuck in traffic, to get out and park it and just jump on the subway. And people were taking pictures of him on the subway because it's that convenient.
Yeah,
we'll never have that in Ottawa.
If you're willing to deal with people's cameras, you know it's got to be your best option.
Yeah.
Yeah,
better the camera than food that I would never eat that I have to now smell on the. Hey, and speaking of sports, Major League Baseball opening day.
Oh, hum.
Yeah.
No, not a Jays
fan. No.
Baseball on a beautiful weather day when you got someone to talk to, or you're scoring the game to stay involved in it, and you're actually otherwise now.
I've seen people do that. They're writing down the scores.
Yeah. You got to be a stats person to be into it, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, watch the highlights.
I think that it is even more boring than basketball.
Basketball's not boring.
Oh, yeah. The
music. Baseball's more boring than golf for me, and that's close. It's close.
You know what the problem with basketball is now? It's all about three-point shots. It's not as exciting as it used to be.
You got to watch the women.
That's
wrecked the game for me. Well, maybe I will watch the women. Thank you. Have a great show. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Wonderful. Bye-bye. Easter, Bill.
This is News Talk.